Yves Galair, Cead Míle Fáilte. Hello, wherever you are. You're very welcome to our History and Community programme, presented by Dublin North Bay Tourism, here on Near 90 FM, and available worldwide on the web, near.ie. Well, it's good to be back after all the threats and everything else about COVID-19, but I don't intend to talk much about it today. In fact, not at all. We'll get on with the programme, let other people deal with that end of things. So I'm Dennis McIntyre, and in these local history programmes, we travel our way along the North Dublin Bay shoreline, a trail, a route of discovery from the Customs House to the rugged Howth Head. We want you to know and enjoy the locality, even in kindling you a new interest in the North Bay area, even to tempt you outdoors, out and about, to explore and discover the various riches and charms of this wonderful area. We want you to be familiar with all aspects of the area and with the treasury of local history on our doorsteps. In many aspects, in its many aspects and affairs, we will include the heritage of the area, the customs, traditions, and things like monuments, memorials. It's an area you may not know, but one we want you to get to know and engage with its diverse environment. Now, we will use and review books with a local interest. We'll remember our clubs, societies, schools, churches and institutions. And from its name, the name of our programme, History and Community, are for, with and by the community. We want your inclusion, interaction and participation. So please contact us if you have a story, a poem or a song concerning the Dublin North Bay area. We would love to hear from anyone who has written on the subject, an essay, a thesis or even a book. Or if you feel we overlook any aspect of the area, please let us know and we'll be glad to include your comments. And we'll remind everyone that our hope and dream is to one day realise and open or create or whatever a visitor or heritage centre somewhere along the North Dublin Bay shoreline. For such a centre, we have the hard work done, the research and the collecting of memorabilia. All we need is a base, a home, maybe someone along our route. Remember, it's all the way from the Customs House to Howth. Might have an unused room to share with us, especially in these times now of empty places. An unused garage space, an office, an unused office space, or even a building or a place, a going concern that might have room for us. Anyway, if you think you could anyway help us in that way, we'd be delighted to hear from you. And for any communication, our email address is DublinNorthBayTourism@gmail.com. Our postal address is 3232 Howth Road, Clontarf, Dublin 3. And our website is DublinNorthBayTourism.com. And if I have time, I will repeat that at the end of the programme. Now, we usually start with recalling a few anniversaries, be they deaths or our birthdays, of maybe people famous or for one reason or another. And we'll just go through a few in the past week. And writer Mary Lavin, who's a very popular writer, she died on March the 25th, 1996. She's mostly remembered for two novels, The House in Clue Street and Mary O'Grady. Now, it has just been announced, and I think it's a welcome announcement, that a public space at Wilton Park is to be named in her memory. It will be called Mary Lavin Place or Square, and will link, those of you who know the area, it will link Ladd Lane to Wilton Park. That's out in Ranelagh, near the Grand... Royal Canal. Now, Cork-born Timothy, or Tim Healy, he was the first Governor-General of the Irish Free State. He died on March the 26th, 1931. His career as a politician leaves him with an unsure position in Irish history. He first supported Parnell when the crisis arose over the Kitty O'Shea divorce. He bitterly opposed Parnell. And then he later opposed John Redmond and supported Sinn Féin. Another who died this week, on the 28th of March, Northern politician, the well-known Eddie McAteer, he was a nationalist politician, he died on the 28th of March, 1986. Now, the artist Jack Butler Yeats, who of course was the brother of the famous writer William Butler Yeats, he died on March the 25th, 1957. He was one of Ireland's finest painters, especially of country scenes travelling people and seafarers. And playwright Sean O'Casey was born at 85 Upper Dorset Street on March the 30th, 1880. He was left-wing in his politics, and in his writings he is praised and criticised in equal measure depending on people's political outlook or persuasion. Everybody remembers his three famous plays, The Shadow of a Gunman, Juno and the Peacock, and The Plough and the Stars. Now, another actor, Ray McAnally. He was born in Buncrana, County Donegal, on March the 30th, 1926. He had great success on stage, in films, and on television. And Arthur Griffith, writer, newspaper, editor, and politician. He was born in Dominic Street, Dublin, on March the 31st, 1871. He founded the Sinn Féin Party, and he led the Irish delegation that signed the 1921 Anglo-Irish Treaty. And finally for today, I'll mention this very day, April the 1st, a writer called Brian O'Nolan, who was also known as Flann O'Brien and Miles Nagapoline. He died on April the 1st, 1966. He's remembered for his satirical wit and his comic invention, and especially for his column, which was called Cruiskeen Lawn in the Irish Times, which he wrote for over 20 years. And I just want to now move on to a little fable concerning the last days of March and the early days of April. And it's about, some of you will know and be familiar with the phrase, the borrowed days. Well, the borrowed days concerns the brindle cow, who complained at the dawn of April about the harshness of March. But March was listening and got angry. So March borrowed a few days from April. And these days brought the worst weather, wet and cold, so bad that the brindle cow actually died. Now, I grew up with a tradition of calling these the rewog days. Now, if somebody out there have heard that term, rewog days, I never found out what it meant. I know it means the borrowed days, but the Irish version. Maybe it actually means, it comes from the Irish translation of the brindle cow, which is bo riovach. That might explain it. But anyways, these were days that we always were told as we were growing up to be careful about our health, because we might get the same fate as the cow. And older people were always very, very wary and nervous in these early days of April, last year's March, because of that story of the brindle cow. Because the cow was tricked. We all used to say March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb. But in the case of the brindle cow, that didn't happen. Now, April itself. Well, this month gets its name from the month Aprilis, the second month in the ancient Roman calendar. No one is really certain what it means. Some say that it comes from the Latin word aperire, which means to open, because it is the time when the plant buds are coming and the arrival of the spring, total springtime, in the northern half of the world. The Romans dedicated their month of Aprilis to the goddess Venus, who watched over the sowing of seeds and the planting of young crops, protecting and nurturing the new growth of these early spring days. In Irish, April is known as Mó Cáise, Cáise being Easter, the month of Easter. And now we just call it Ebron. Now today, of course, is a very special day in that it's April Fool's Day. So where did this April Fool's Day thing come from? Well, let's have a look. This is the day when people try to fool each other. And it originally involved sending someone on a fool's errand, usually with a letter, to be delivered to a friend. Inside the letter would be a note saying, "Send the fool further." This note was then put into another envelope, addressed to another friend, and so the poor fool was sent further. He would probably spend all day going from place to place. But whatever about that, historians are uncertain as to the real origins of the April Fool's Day and the legend surrounding it. Many suggest that the idea originated with the ancient Romans, as the jesters were always jesters on court, that they were actually given a day off, and that their bosses, if you like, played the fool for that one day that these jesters were given time off. Another legend associates the day with Noah. You know Noah, the story of the biblical story of Noah and the ark, first sending of the dove to find land, and the dove returned to the ark without being able to find land. So now the best April Fool jokes are to do with sending somebody on a fool's errand. However, you know, afternoon jokes on the day. The day only lasts until midday. And afternoon jokes rebound on the joker. And the intended victim can retort to the would-be jester, April Fool's, days past and gone, you're the fool and I'm none. Yet another legend suggests that long ago, New Year's Day was on the 1st of April. Later, when the calendar came into use and the beginning of the new year was transferred to January, some people forgot and celebrated New Year's Day at the old time. So they were called April Fools. Now, in India, during the Holi festival, a celebration of the ending of winter and the beginning of spring, the Hindus sent fools on fruitless errands. In France, the fool is called an April fish. The fools were April fish because they continued to celebrate New Year in April rather than in January. Now, and the theory that All Fools' Day was originally a celebration of the coming of spring, a happy farewell to winter's ice and snow, is very popular and might well be true. And there was also a universal festival at the time, of the vernal equinox, that's March the 21st. Some say this holiday was incorporated into Easter. Others see our April Fool's Day as its last remains. The day is also said to have connections with the pointless sending of Christ. You know Christ's trial coming up to Easter. He was handed over from Annas to Caiaphas to Pontius Pilate. It was pointless because he was going to die anyway. And so this was done before his crucifixion. So there's connections with that. In Scotland, a foolish person is called an April Gawk, which means an April cuckoo. And in Ireland, we make a Namadon Ebron of somebody. Now, Easter itself. Well, the origin of the Feast of Easter go back to the beginnings of Christianity. And Easter is probably the oldest Christian observance after Sunday itself. The name Easter is of uncertain origin, but two explanations are usually offered. The Venerable Bede, from a religious background, proposed in the 8th century that it was derived from the name of an Anglo-Saxon goddess of spring, Eastre, E-A-S-T-R-E. This view has long been popular. The other view is that the early Latin Christians called Easter week Hebadomade Alb, and this comes from the white garments worn by newly baptised. This was later wrongfully translated into the old High German Easterorun. In modern German, it's Ostern, O-S-T-R-N, which translates into English as Easter. Now, as we all know, Easter is a movable feast and is celebrated in the Western world. And you know how you often, especially growing up, you said, why is it a changing? Why is it on different dates? Well, in the Western world, it's celebrated as the first Sunday after the full moon that occurs on or after the vernal equinox. That's the 21st of March. Now, if the full moon occurs on a Sunday, Easter Day, that's Easter Sunday, is the Sunday afterwards. Easter, therefore, can fall between March the 22nd and April the 25th, which is practically a full month. Now, a slightly different calculation was used in the Eastern Church. But going on those that theory, the earliest possible date for Easter Sunday is March the 22nd. And that last occurred in the year 1818 and will next occur in the year 2285. And I don't think too many of us will be around for that. Now, and the latest date is April 25th. That last occurred in 1943 and will not happen again until 2038. That's 17 years from now. Well, we might have a chance to be around for that one. Now, Maundy Thursday, or Holy Thursday, is actually the first of the actual Easter days. If you like, the little Easter season begins then. And it commemorates the Last Supper, that of our Lord with his apostles. The name Maundy derives from the Latin word mandatum, which is a commandment. It referred to the washing of the feet of the disciples by Christ. 300 years later, the Pope, priests, noblemen, they all engaged in the practice of washing the feet of 12 servants. And, like the king or wealthy landowners, symbolically they wash the feet of poor people under them. Now, more practically, money, food and clothes were distributed to the poor. And particularly in England, specially minted silver coins were presented by the king or queen to as many poor and elderly as there were years in the monarch's life. And this replaced the earlier custom of washing of the feet. And to this day, some money bags are still presented. Sorry, my throat is at me. I'm taking a little nip of water. Now, on Holy Thursday, as it is generally called in Ireland, the churches had to be visited and walking was the order of the day. Now, churches looked, and still do when opened, they look so different because, remember, the statues are all shrouded in purple and the tabernacle is standing open-doored and empty. Good Friday is the day of the crucifixion and also the day on which hot cross buns are eaten, a custom which goes back very far in history. And I was just following up the story of the hot cross buns, and it's very interesting just how far back these things go. The cross actually comes from the Egyptian symbol of the horns of the ox, which marked the small cakes made in honour of the moon goddess. It is also thought that the cross marked the four quarters of the moon. Now, the Saxons made a bun with the cross to ensure even rising of the dough. And in some places it was thought the preservation of a bun or loaf marked with a cross and baked on Easter Day would ensure protection for the coming year. Small spice cakes have been found in Viking burial sites as offerings to the gods for the souls of the departed. This custom was widespread in Europe and Asia and was transformed, by the church into a Christian form. And as far back as when the Romans invaded Europe, they used to eat small wheaten cakes divided in four sections with the cross on top during the spring festival. The cross for them represented the four quarters or phases of the moon. The first Christians also adopted this custom, but on their buns, the cross represented Christ's cross on Calvary. Now, why were they hot and cross? Well, the buns were hot because, firstly, they were made from highly spiced materials, and secondly, the bakers used to literally sell them piping hot from the ovens. On Good Friday as well, it was traditional to sow parsley. And from my own memories of farming days, Good Friday was a day of planting vegetables and crops, beginning on Good Friday, and it was done over the Easter period. Now, I think a lot of the farmers, certainly in my day, they picked Easter time, no matter when it fell, whether it was an early Easter or a late Easter, simply because the children were off on holidays and home from school, and they had good cheap labour in the farmyard, because in those days, certainly, and I'm sure with the places like North Dublin, and indeed all over the country, families tended to be very big. So they had a ready-made workforce. So they got them working for the Easter holidays and got the planting done. And planting meant the planting of lettuce and onions and turnips and peas and parsnips and potatoes and grain crops like oats. And they were brought up with a tradition, and it's not a bad tradition, that if you don't, it's like you can lay more generally in life, but if you don't plant in springtime, well, you won't reap in the harvest. So it's like, I suppose, saving money or whatever. The same principle applies. And of course, in farming terms, and you know, I know we're in Dublin City now, but North County Dublin is still a very farming area. It's also the lambing season and the calving season. Now, Easter Day, or Easter Sunday, commemorates the resurrection of Christ. Now, preparations for Easter took place for some days beforehand. Houses were cleaned from top to bottom and decorated with spring flowers. New clothes were made and special cakes are baked. Another custom was for children to rise early when they would climb to the top of the nearest hill to see the sun dance, which it was supposed to do in honour of Christ. And the custom of, you often heard of something new for Easter, new clothes at Easter. There's a very old tradition and a very popular custom behind today's custom of having something new for Easter. Traditionally, only new clothes were worn at Easter in honour of the new life and the risen Christ. In fact, it was believed bad luck would overcome the person who wore old clothes to church at Easter time. If new clothes could not be afforded, you know, and God knows that would be the lot for a lot of people, the belief was that, you know, you could overcome this by wearing something, some one new item, if it was only, particularly for women, if it was only a scarf or gloves or a hat or whatever. It was, and it is possible, popular to tog out with something new at Easter, especially Easter Monday. And those daring enough will don an outfit of the latest fashion in the hope of bringing good luck and fortunes for themselves for the coming year. And I suppose when we think of race course meetings nowadays, and the ladies in their fine hats and all that, it's a tradition, particularly on Easter Monday. France, it's very traditional to put away all winter clothes at Easter and take out summer outfits only. Now, something very associated with Easter is the egg. And most of today's Easter customs have their origin in pagan natural rites. The ancient peoples celebrations of the death of the old year and the birth of the new at Easter. And they celebrated, you know, when flowers blossom again, trees bore new leaves, birds built nests, animals gave birth to the young. And one of their symbols of the rebirth of the year at springtime was the egg. Now, the egg is an object of wonder because of its perfect shape and its containing new life. In the very first Christians, the adapted, you know, rites and beliefs with the egg at the centre and to celebrate this famous feast of new life, new resurrection, new beginnings at Easter. And it was traditional in many, many cultures to give hen or goose eggs as presents, with their shells painted in various designs, the colours having been produced from dyes made from plants. And it was considered a very good look to get an egg, a coloured egg at this time that would bring you sort of fame and fortune in the coming years. Countries in Eastern Europe and Poland and such places, they had the custom of these hand-coloured eggs, and they actually suspended them from the bare twigs of a small tree branch fixed in a pot. And that gave us the tradition of the Easter tree. We all talk about the Christmas tree, but there was an Easter tree as well. Now again, looking at eggs more closely as symbols of resurrection and continuing life, they're associated with Easter in many, many lands. The ancient Greeks and the Romans, like the Persians and the Chinese, they exchanged the coloured eggs that I've just mentioned. And in vineyards throughout Europe, scarlet eggs, and you can make what you like about that word scarlet, they are left as a protection against the havoc of hailstorms or thunder. And a funny one is that in medieval times, during Easter ceremonies, the deans and bishops used to bring eggs to the church. As the antiphon started, they began to dance and throw the eggs at the choristers, who passed them to one another as the dancing and singing continued. Now just imagine all the solemn deans and bishops throwing the eggs and capering around with their skirts hitched up. Well, I wonder if the eggs were hard-boiled. Now, egg-rolling contests held in many villages still survive today in some rural areas of Ireland, and also in Scotland and England. Hard-boiled eggs are rolled down a slope at a signal, and the first unbroken egg to reach the bottom, it's declared the winner. In America, the president organised a children's egg-rolling contest at Easter in the White House lawn. It's not certain what the origin of this custom is, although it's suggested that may have been used as a reminder of the rolling back of the stone at the entrance to the tomb of Christ. Now, the chocolate Easter egg that we are so familiar with now didn't start until about roughly a century ago, about 100 years ago. Now, I have one eye on the clock, and I know time. I had much, much more to say about these customs, But I realise that the old clock is ticking up with us. I'll just mention two short ones, and I might finish with a little poem or two concerning Easter. You've heard of simnel cakes are made at Easter, and I often wondered where the simnel came from. Well, it goes back to a man and his wife, Sim and Nell. They mixed ingredients for a cake at one Easter, and then they argued about whether the mixture ought to be boiled or baked. Finally, they agreed to boil it first and then bake it, and the end result was so delicious, it was named Simnel after Sim and his wife Nell, the Simnel cake. And the Easter bunnies. Now, funny enough, the animal traditionally associated with Easter was the hare. We very like the bunny, the rabbit, but the hare nonetheless. And in olden days, hare hunts took place so that the dawn goddess would be pleased with their sacrifice. In the early Christian church, the hare came to be looked upon as the animal which symbolised faith in Christ. In Egypt, the hare was the symbol of fertility, but the rabbit has replaced the hare in as today's Easter symbol. Now, I thought I might include a poem or two, one I think you'll be very familiar with, about the daffodils, because we're in springtime. April is surely the height of spring, and the daffodil in many ways epitomises what April, spring and Easter is about. So in my own walks, that I do a constitutional walk every morning, the park near where I live, I've been admiring the daffodils yet again this year, all through April, but of course they're beginning to wilt now. So we'll take the one you're all familiar with, I'm sure, Wordsworth, William Wordsworth's poem. Wordsworth wrote this in the Lake District of Northern England, and he's really admiring, he's enthralled by the sheer beauty, grace, gaiety and loveliness of the daffodils. And then I'll do a quick one afterwards about the demise of the daffodil. So, the daffodils, Wordsworth. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils, beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze. Continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way, they stretched in never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 saw I at a glance, tossing their heads in sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced, but they outdid the sparkling waves in glee. A poet could not be but gay in such a jocund company. I gazed and gazed with little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. For oft when on my couch I lie in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon the inward eye, which is the bliss of solitude, and then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils. And a quick one on the demise of the daffodils. Fair daffodils we weep to see. This is by Robert Herrick, an Anglican minister, and he's sorry to see he laments the regrets the going of the daffodils. Fair daffodils we weep to see you haste away so soon, as yet the early rising sun has not attained his noon. Stay, stay until the hasting day has run but to evening song, and having prayed together we will go along with you along. We have short time to stay, as you we have as short a spring, as quick a growth to meet decay, as you or anything we die, as your hours do, and dry away, like the summer's rain, or as the pearls of morning's dew, ne'er to be found again. Well, time has caught up with us. You've been listening to Dennis Becker on the community and History Show. If you want to contact us, our email is dublinnorthbaytourism@gmail.com. And our postal address is 3232 Holt Road, Clontarf, Dublin 3. And until next week, I say bye and thanks for listening.